We have been studying during this quarter last day events. 2 weeks ago, I unloaded on you who were here the material that I had been accumulating on the question of the sealing without any final conclusions. And having to be away last Wednesday night, I had asked Marcel Anderson to present something along the same line that had to do with the Joshua and the angel and the sealing time. The main thing that has happened to me on this question of the sealing times has frustrated me to want to study it more and come to some tangible conclusions. But inherent in that particular study is the question of the 144,000. And perhaps this is a good time during vacation to present this topic and run. Of all the topics that at least Adventists have discussed, this appears to be one of the hottest and the heaviest. This is the kind of topic that preachers talk when they're pitching tents at camp meeting and people speculate on. But you'll have to admit that it has a lot to do with the subject of the sealing, because it's the 144,000 who are sealed. Now, there are three texts in the Bible on the subject. Let's read, first of all, the last ones, Revelation, the 14th chapter. Revelation 14, verse 3. And they sung, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders, and no man could learn that song but the 144,000 which were redeemed from the earth. All right? The second text is in Revelation 14, verse 1. And I looked, and lo, a lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his father's name written in their foreheads. Now, there's a little more in this passage on it, but the third and last text on the subject is in Revelation, the 7th chapter, where we'd like to read just a little more as we open this topic. Revelation 7, and let's start with the very first verse. After these things, I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels, to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of our God in their foreheads. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. And then it lists the different tribes down through verse 8. Right here, I would like to read one sentence from a comment out of the Spirit of Prophecy published in the Bible Commentary, Volume 7, page 970. Let us strive with all the power that God has given us to be among the 144,000. Now, let that sentence register in your mind as we consider this passage in Revelation 7. Obviously, if I am supposed to strive with all of my power to be one of the 144,000, then the first question is answered already. It isn't confined to the 12 tribes of Israel, right? How many do we have here who are from one of the 12 tribes of Israel? It would have to include wider group than that, and would therefore take off from Paul's statement that if you be Christ, then are ye Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. Now, one of the very next questions that comes up on this subject is 144,000. That's all that are going to be saved or that are going to be sealed. And of course, this has made the issue a very heavy issue and topic, because when we compare even the ones that we hope are Christians in the world today with that small number, it doesn't look too encouraging. And so we've had all kinds of speculation about 144,000 must be a symbolic number, a figurative number. Maybe it applies to the heads of families, and it would be men besides women and children, or maybe some other way that the symbol would be used here. And as a result of that, we've come up with some conclusions that the 144,000, at least some of us have, 144,000 must represent only a part of those who are alive when Christ comes. And that there must be a great multitude that no one can number in addition to that. Have you had any conclusions on the subject? I think that I'm going to confess my conclusion in the past as being exactly that. And it's based to a great extent on a chapter in early writings called The Shaking, which describes a great shakedown in the church among God's so-called people, so that a large number are shaken out and a smaller number remain. And the smaller number obviously become involved in the latter rain and the taking of the gospel to a larger number who haven't heard it without the fear of relatives or other ties in the very end. This was a view that was very clearly presented, I found out later, by Taylor Bunch, one of our good scholars of yesteryear, and he used to write and preach quite a bit along this line. It has caused some difference of opinion. But with that in mind, I would like to have you read with me in the 7th chapter of Revelation, starting with verse 9, about the great multitude that no one could number. Right here, let's take a look at the possibilities of this great multitude. Either it could refer to, in addition to the 144,000, a group of people from all ages who are raised from the dead and are in God's kingdom, or it could refer to a group of people in addition to the 144,000 who are alive at Christ's coming, or the great multitude that no man could number could refer to both parts of those who are alive in addition to the 144,000 at Christ's coming, plus those who are raised from the dead of all ages at Christ's coming. But let's notice how the chapter reads, Revelation 7, verse 9. After this, that is, after what? After the picture of the 144,000. I beheld, and lo, a great multitude, which no man could number, of all nations and kindreds and people and tongues, stood before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes and palms in their hands. Now, we noticed a couple of weeks ago that the palms signify that they have gained the victory, and the white robes that they have been clothed with the righteousness of Christ, 7 BC 970. All right, and it says this group cried with a loud voice, verse 10, saying, salvation to our God, which sitteth upon the throne, and unto the Lamb. And all the angels stood around about the throne and about the elders and the four beasts, and fell before the thrones on their faces and worshiped God, saying, Amen, blessing and glory and wisdom and thanksgiving and honor and power and might be unto our God forever and ever. Amen. Then comes verse 13. One of these elders asks a question that many people have asked since that time. But the question is answered. One of the elders, and apparently it's a rhetorical question, one of the elders answered, saying unto him, or unto me, What are these which are arrayed in white robes, and whence came they? Apparently referring to the great multitude, right? And I said unto him, Sir, thou knowest, or in other words, what are you asking me for? You have more inside information than I do. But the one who is writing presumes to answer the question. He said to me, he's reflecting the answer that came from the elder, These are they which came out of great tribulation and have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore are they before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple, and he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. They shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them unto living fountains of waters, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. So, what do we have so far? We have 144,000 who are sealed. And we have a great multitude that no one can number. The great multitude have come out of great tribulation. And the promise is that they shall hunger and thirst no more, and the sun shall not light on them nor any heat. Do you know who they are yet? The major comment on this passage in what we call the Spirit of Prophecy is recorded in the book Great Controversy, page 648 and 649. And I'd like to see how many points you can glean out of this as we notice the description. Upon the crystal sea, before the throne, are gathered the company that have gotten the victory over the beast and over his image and over his mark. When is the mark of the beast? Do you know? From your study previously. Follows the issuance of the Sunday law. Okay. People are not receiving the mark of the beast now. They're only preparing for it. Mark of the beast comes later. Okay. 144,000 have gotten the victory over the beast, over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name. With the Lamb upon Mount Zion, having the harps of God, they stand, 144,000, that were redeemed from among men. And there is heard as the sound of many waters, and as the sound of a great thunder, the voice of harpers harping with their harps. And they sing a new song, a song which no one can learn, save the 144,000. It is the song of Moses and the Lamb, a song of deliverance. None but the 144,000 can learn that song, for it is a song of their experience, an experience such as no other company have ever had. No other company have ever had. I don't know, maybe there's some significance to that company, rather than no other individual has ever had. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These, having been translated from the earth, from among the living. Is that quite clear as to who the 144,000 are in one sense? Are counted as the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb. These are they which came out of great tribulation. Now notice the Spirit of Prophecy definition of the Great Tribulation. These are they which came out of great tribulation. They have passed through the time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation. They have endured the anguish of the time of Jacob's trouble. They have stood without an intercessor through the final outpouring of God's judgment. But they have been delivered. For they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of their lamb. In their mouth is found no guile, for they are without fault before God. Therefore are they before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And he that sitteth on the throne shall dwell among them. They have seen the earth wasted with famine and pestilence. What's that? During the seven last plagues. They have seen the sun having power to scorch men with great heat. What plague is that? Anyone recall? Is it the last one? Is it the next to the last one? I can tell you one thing, that the seeing the sun with power to scorch men with heat happens before the special resurrection. You ever check that out? And they themselves have endured suffering, hunger, and thirst. Suffering, hunger, and thirst. But they shall hunger no more, neither thirst any more, neither shall the sun light on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb which is in the midst of the throne shall feed them, and shall lead them unto living fountains of waters, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. So you have in this passage the same type of language applied in terms of times, great tribulation, the sun and the heat, the hunger, the thirst, and all that, applied to the 144,000 and applied to the great multitude that no man can number. Do you catch that at all? And it seems to me that the connection is at least apparent, if not quite clear, that the great tribulation includes the same tribulation for the great multitude that is included or involved with 144,000. Now, so much for that. I'm going to, rather than take a whole lot more time, simply give you from a work that I have found helpful on the subject, Gordon Collier's compilation. He does a tremendous job of getting material together. Whatever you make of his conclusions is your own business, but his material is well documented and authenticated. 25 statements from the Spirit of Prophecy to go with the three texts in the Bible on this subject. And these are the conclusions, the 10 characteristics of the 144,000. A, they have a special experience, such as no other company in the universe has experienced. B, they gain the victory over the beast, his image, and his mark. C, they have stood without an intercessor throughout the final outpouring of God's judgments. This is the 144,000. D, they have seen the earth wasted with famine and pestilence, and the sun having power to scorch men with great heat. E, they passed through the great time of trouble. F, they have endured the anguish of the time of Jacob's trouble. G, they witnessed the first resurrection and recognized their friends who have died. Early Writings, page 16. H, they are translated from among the living, which we've already noticed. I, they are a definite numerical number. Early Writings, page 15. The living saints, 144,000 in number, knew and understood the voice, while the wicked thought it was thunder and an earthquake. J, they are the first fruits unto God and the Lamb. If they are the first fruits, then what are the rest? Would that be a decent question? And that makes the 10 points. of identification. We can notice a few points on the character of the 144,000 in a moment. But it seems to me that the question of who the 144,000 are is not veiled in that great a mystery that we've sometimes said. The points of identification appear to be quite clear. The thing that leaves us a little bit hanging is the question of the great multitude that no man can number. And some of us toy with the idea that maybe that is rather clear as well. Now, of course, I suppose that when we open this up for your feedback in a few moments, that it'll be like Paul talking about the resurrection to the Sanhedrin, and perhaps we should be willing for that kind of risk. But let's notice quickly the character of the 144,000, which is probably more important when it comes to this question of striving to be among them. How much of the identification of the 144,000 can we see challenged to strive to be among, as opposed to how much of the character of the 144,000 could we strive to be with? And I'll just list them again. The character of the 144,000, A, they are in such complete sympathy with God and His cause that they sigh and cry for the abominations done in the land. B, they receive the seal of the living God. C, they have a pure religion. They are not defiled by apostate or false religious ideas. D, they attain complete victory. In their mouth is found no guile. E, they are without fault before God. Next, they choose rather to die than to worship the beast or his image. Revelation 12:11, they love not their lives unto the death. And they are really like Jesus, whose image they reflect fully according to some of the material we have on the subject. Of Jesus it is said, neither was any deceit in his mouth, Isaiah 53:9. And who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth, 1 Peter 2:22. Of the 144,000, this says in Revelation 14, in their mouth was found no guile. And the word for guile, perhaps some of you have noticed earlier, is taken from the Greek, which means fish bait. And the perhaps more English meaning of the term guile is that there's no deceit. There's no duplicity. There's no two-facedness. There's no spiritual schizophrenia. They are the same inside and outside. It isn't like the fish hook, where you have one thing that looks good on the outside and something that is deadly on the inside. None of that. No deceit found in it. Now, we can certainly see a challenge to be among the 144,000 when it comes to wanting to be like Jesus, can't we? And the appeal and the statements we have concerning this possibility as far as poor sinners in the world of sin are concerned are very ideal sounding to some people. The question is Jesus enough? Is his power enough? And if I have been invited to, with all of my powers, strive by God's grace to have the character of the 144,000, I'd like to listen to that kind of appeal, wouldn't you? Do I have to get discouraged about it in the meantime and measure myself and think, well, I don't think I'm ever going to make it? No, not at all. Because what God has started, He's able to complete. Perhaps enough of that. Let's find out what you people know about the 144,000 that can reveal what I have missed. And it should be easy for you to talk tonight. So come on, let's not have any long waiting period. Yes. Well, of course, a lot of people dying every day. You're talking about in a more than that, a big death rate all of a sudden. We're told that this is going to happen, and the information we have is that many people who are too old and too feeble will be laid to rest before the times of trouble. And on the opposite end of the scale, that there will be many infants laid to rest before the times of trouble. I think from my personal study that there will be some people who will be laid to rest for other reasons than feebleness. Or perhaps inability to grasp some of the issues in the very end that they're thinking. But that may be a private opinion. Yes. He doesn't like the idea of striving to be among the first 50 in line. Okay. So you would feel a little more humble about not striving to be among the 144,000. Or you're wondering. Would it be possible, I'm identifying with you because I've had some of the same thoughts. Would it be possible for me to want to be among the 144,000 for the wrong reasons? And, you know, sort of the Green Beret, wherever they are. And if I wanted to be among the 144,000 for the wrong reasons, would there be much chance that I would be? That would be a fair question. Yes. All right, that's an interesting view, question. 144,000 have anything to do with salvation, or do they have something to do with an interesting insight into God? God's character, okay? You mean the exoneration of God's character? Okay. Someone have some light on the question? Yes? Yes? Doesn't say when. Huh? Selected Messages, Volume 1, page 175. It is not God's will that we shall get into controversy over questions which will not help us spiritually, such as, who is to compose 144,000? This, those who are the elect of God will in a short time know without question. But the comment does not say when they will know. In heaven? Or sometime before? Let me read you Collier's summary. And there are a few clues here in addition to the ones we've already mentioned. I have read the ones up until this one. Right here. They stand next to Christ in heaven. They are the only ones who can sing the song. Well, I think we hit that one. They stand in a perfect square on the sea of glass. They are the only ones who have the honor of entering the temple in heaven. Their names are engraven in letters of gold on tables of stone inside the temple of heaven. They visit other worlds, and they follow the Lamb wherever he goes throughout the universe. Now, those are the additional clues that come from these 25 statements. So you can see that in the post-second coming, in the heavenly kingdom, that there will be evidently a clear identification. Anyone else with help at this point? Yes. Her question is Revelation 14:4. They are virgins, not defiled with women. How literally can we take this in? Now, what was the last part of that? Yeah. Okay. I know of a good Bible scholar, a Bible worker, Mary Walsh by name, for whom I have a great deal of respect, who says that she can never be among the 144,000. Because she was involved with an apostate church before she found truth. And she bases it on that text. And I say, come on, Mary Walsh, how can you take that position? Because a woman in Bible prophecy, she said, represents a church, right? And in Revelation, it representing a church. Obviously, they aren't defiled with false or apostate churches or false or apostate belief or teaching represented by those churches. But isn't it possible for a person to be pure and undefiled now, albeit he wasn't yesteryear, this type of thing? I think that most of the scholars that I've read on the subject take the position that they are not presently defiled with false doctrine or teaching. Yes. His question has to do with the passage concerning the only ones entering the temple. All right, let me see if I can find that. Yes. Early Writings, page 16. They stand in a perfect square on the sea of glass. And Early Writings, page 19, they have the honor of entering the temple in heaven. And this is the sentence from which it's taken. As we were about to enter the holy temple, Jesus raised his lovely voice and said, only the 144,000 enter this place. And we shouted, Alleluia. Now, that last phrase got me. I didn't know how to accept that last phrase. Because I interpreted it through my glasses when I read that last phrase. And it sounded to me like being one of the Green Berets, you see. But anyway, that's the passage. You might want to look it up and read it. Yes. All right. I'm glad that you can see another possibility to my glasses that I was looking through. Those who are registered as holy will be unaware of the fact, and the 144,000 will probably be surprised, he said. Good. Yes. If we, he is suggesting, I think, that if the devil could get us to say, well, if I'm the last one to squeeze in through the gates, that'll be good enough. And therefore, keep the 144,000 from being developed. That the devil might pull a fast one. And that maybe this is one of God's reasons why we ought to strive with all of our powers to be among them. Did I paraphrase that right or wrong? Halfway there? Okay. And you had another question on the subject. Yeah, is God waiting for 144,000? And if it's only at 135,000, does that mean we'll have to wait another year or two type of thing? Okay? Now, of course, some of these questions have inherent within them an apparent answer. And I don't think that I'm going to take the pressure of trying to answer them all. My mind is already made up on 144,000, and I am sure that everyone wouldn't agree with me at all. I really believe that those who have light and truth now may have to be among the 144,000 in order to be translated at all. And that the great multitude that no man can number may include people who haven't had light and truth until the last minute. That's the way I felt for some time, but I'm sure that there would be a difference of opinion on that conclusion. Yes. That would be another topic for another evening. Where is the temple? This is another thing that threw me just a little bit. In the comments concerning the 144,000 being the only ones that could enter the temple, and then you couple with that the great multitude comment in Revelation 7, and it says in verse 15 concerning the great multitude, therefore are they before the throne of God and serve him day and night in his temple. And so I thought, well, maybe someone tonight will have some light on that. Yes. Then his suggestion is that the first and last part of Revelation 7 are talking about the same group. Okay? Yes. Okay, back to the problem of the small number, too small a number. And of course, under the showers of the latter rain and the great final movement in this world, we have some rather astounding information in terms of numbers. The gospel is going to go and there's going to be, light or a church or companies of believers in every village and town. And you figure out how many villages and towns there are in India, I heard someone say here a while back. And astounding power and response, apparently, under the great final movement. So, and if we say that the movement is not going to close with any less power than it began, and you take the situation of the early church after Pentecost, then in comparison with the population at this time and at that time, it would be pretty hard to have one-tenth of one person in Napa Valley representing the final movement, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yes. That's interesting. Mathematician thinking here. Did you hear that? Now, you people who sit back underneath the balcony on a night like this, you ought to be punished. But I know you're sitting back there so you can hear. You could hear on the second row. Anyway, what was the first thing you said? Eight. It seemed like a small number that were saved in the days of Noah. And if we're going to spring from as it was in the days of Noah, then we would have a very small number in the days of the coming of the Son of Man, right? In comparison. What can you get in conclusion from this study? That can you give us something tonight, or if nothing tonight, something from your own pondering of this and your own prayer and meditation that would give you something of spiritual value and inspiration from this subject.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.